Love, hate, fear. The palace wasn't at all how he remembered it from his last visit, but King Jezal had still been alive then, and Leo had been a loyal Lord Governor with all his limbs, and the Lords Round had held a high-minded brotherhood of noblemen rather than a bloodthirsty rabble under the sway of an insane witch. Times change, he supposed. The winners are those who change with them. The gilded hallways echoed with strange sounds, something between a demented carnival and a riot. Jagged music came from somewhere, or maybe someone was smashing a harp. There was an odd smell, like a cheap brothel. Slashed paintings of smug monarchs had been hung upside down. A neatly dressed, dark-skinned man sat in a chair, fussing nervously with his hat and jumping at every sound. Some ambassador, maybe? A pair of women in red dresses, scarcely fastened, stumbled giggling past, one holding a wine bottle, the other a pot of slopping paint, leaving a snaking trail of red footprints behind them.
"They used to say the heart of the state was rotten," muttered Glarwood, with one glance back over his shoulder. "Now look at it." "It's hell," whispered Durant. "They've turned it into bloody hell."
Snow swirled in through a broken window, bang, bang, banging a shutter against the frame and leaving a chilly puddle in the hallway. Overstoked blazes in every fireplace made it greasy hot, even so. And if that wasn't enough to get the sweat springing from Leo's forehead, there were armed burners everywhere, armour dotted with red paint. Some of them even had their faces smeared with crimson ladies' blusher, stuck somewhere between war-daubed savages from beyond the crinner and murderous clowns.
"Please, he's innocent, I swear!"
A cultured voice, weeping and begging at once, coming from a door ajar, its lock hacked away with an axe.
"They're taking him to the tower today."
"Maybe I could talk to Judge on your behalf, Lilot."
A man's voice. He sounded like he was enjoying himself.
"Just tell me what I can do."
"Get your clothes off for a start."
Glarwood faltered, jaw clenched, as the strip of light from that slightly open door fell across his face.
"Should we do something?" he whispered.
Leo didn't even slow down.
"Don't be fucking ridiculous."
Before the great change, it would have been him asking whether they should do something, bursting through that door in some self-indulgent, self-defeating puke of gallantry. But then he used to be a reckless, soft-hearted fool. He remembered giving out bread and blankets in the slums with Savine 1,000 years ago. He'd torn his hair at the state of those poor people, wept that he couldn't do more. Now he winced at the tiresome interruption of this woman's pain. It felt trivial beside the pain in his stump. As his mother always used to say, he couldn't allow himself to be swept off by whatever emotion blew his way. He had the big picture to worry about.
"Well," purred the man's voice, "you want him saved or not?"
"There's nothing we can do."
Durand caught Glarwood's elbow and hurried him on, the woman snivelling soon lost behind them. Leo clenched his jaw and upped the pace, his face twitching with each scrape of his metal foot. He was finding a way to live with this shit, wasn't he? So could she. Everywhere the walls were hacked and scored, carvings scarred where the sun of the monarchy had been torn down, chiselled out, scraped away. Slogans had been sloshed in their place in red paint. "Rise up, equality, Middleland for its people." And finally, across the tiled floor at the foot of a stairway crusted with gilded leaves, "Fuck yourselves." Juran raised his brows.
"I never yet saw the burner's philosophy so succinctly expressed."
"That gets to the heart of it,"
muttered Leo as he struggled up the steps. Flat, he could almost manage now without a cane. Stairs were still an embarrassment. He had to take them one at a time, slightly sideways. Cain first, then the false leg, then the good one. There was always a moment when the weight went through his stump, through the socket, through his iron foot, when he'd feel like he was about to fall. Always a moment when he gritted his teeth against the pain and simply refused to go down. He realized Glaurwood was lurking at his elbow as if to catch him.
"Don't hover," he grunted.
"He'd rather you didn't brain yourself," said Durin, trotting past. Leo paused at the top of the steps to catch his breath, let the pain in his throbbing stump subside, mop away sweat with the back of his good sleeve, wedged the other more firmly into his jacket. He became aware of a regular creaking of furniture through the closed door beside him, a noisy grunting, groaning, moaning. At least 4 different voices. One might have been crying.
"They're either fucking or killing each other," muttered Durand. "Or both," said Leo, setting himself as proudly as he could for the last few steps to Judge's door.
Her office was a huge domed chamber choked with rubbish. Empty bottles, full bottles, bent cutlery, axes and flat bows, stained and ripped up bundles of documents, a half-picked chicken carcass, antique vases used as ashtrays. An ornate bed the size of a small warship had half its silk curtains hanging in tatters, one of its pillows split and spilling feathers across the floor, dancing in a draught. Durand was staring at something with a vaguely horrified expression. Leo followed his gaze. He hoped he was mistaken. He very much hoped. But it looked as though someone had done a shit on the floor. Through an open door, Leo glimpsed limp, bare limbs. Burners sleeping off their revels, maybe. But he wouldn't have been at all surprised to find they were corpses. A woman bound up in bandoliers of little knives squatted against the wall, rolling dice. A pair of scarred men watched the snow fall outside one of the narrow windows. An ill-favoured bastard with a badly broken face sneered at them, arms folded. Gunnar Broad stood in towering silence, sipping from a bottle as he watched Leo limp in. He'd changed as much as the palace, and in much the same direction. No trace of the careful guardian who'd watched over Leo and Savine that day in the slums. His eyes, tiny behind those thick lenses, had an awful blankness Leo didn't want to meet, as if the only reason he hadn't exploded into violence was that he couldn't decide whose head to crush first. Judge sprawled beside him on a monstrous couch in front of a monstrous fire. She wore a tattered robe of bright Suljuk silk that showed a slice of pale, knobbly breastbone and an angry dotting of rash all the way up her neck. Her hair hung in a tangled orange curtain over one eye, the other narrowed, red-rimmed, fixed on Leo.
"If it ain't Citizen Brock himself," that black eye darted to Durand and Glaurwood. "And the survivors of the Young Lions Angland Boys Club. Welcome to my parlour."
An ancient mural covered the walls, or its battered remains at least. Above Judge's head, an old man lay bleeding in a forest, 5 figures walking away from him on one side, 6 on the other. Leo hadn't taken much notice of his tutors, so he'd only the vaguest idea what it represented. The death of Juvens, bleeding his last, while his apprentices, the Magi, marched off to avenge him. He supposed the balding one at the front was Baez, but someone had scraped his face off and daubed a red cock in its place. Probably it had been quite the masterpiece a few months ago, but the burners had set to work on it like everything else, hacked and hammered at it, daubed bold slogans and crabby treatises and crude horns and tails and childish obscenities over it, adding to Juven's wounds, until he was bleeding a great dripping flood around the fireplace. Judge grinned.
"Fire, death and vengeance, and my favourite wizard."
She waved at the wall behind Leo, and he twisted to frown over his shoulder.
looming above the door he'd come in by, grim, forbidding, and untouched by red paint, was Juven's brother and his murderer, the master maker Canadius, spreading his arms wide with a sea of flames behind him. Now there's a bastard who knew how to set fires. Leo forced a smile over his disgust and limped into the room, feeling like a cockerel strutting into a fox's den.
Citizeness Judge, I believe you sent for me.
You believe correctly. Why don't you all sit down? Judge waved to battered chairs. Just shove that shit on the floor.
I'd rather stand.
She looked down at his leg and wrinkled her nose in a disbelieving little grin.
That's a funny thing for a one-legged man to rather do. Come on, take the weight off your foot. Have some fucking tea.
She nudged a teapot across the table through a rattling mass of junk, knocking a stack of books flapping to the floor.
Not a fan of southern habits myself, but a little tea can poke the right hole.
Glarwood righted a toppled nursing chair and perched nervously on its edge. One of the men at the window bared his teeth and gave a strange hiss. Leo winced as he tried to sit with a measure of dignity. Judge had fished a husk pipe from the rubbish, was sucking on it hard enough to make her cheeks go hollow.
You all reckon I'm mad, don't you?
She said, letting smoke spill from her nose in brown plumes like a dragon. There was a nervous silence. Durand cleared his throat.
I wouldn't say being mad has its uses, or having people think you're mad does. They don't see you coming. King Orso saw you coming at Stauffenbeck, didn't he, young lion?
He did, said Leo, from 1,000 miles away. A painful lesson, one I'll never need to learn again.
They're the best kind. Rizenau thought I was mad. Still a few bits of him spattered about the moat, I expect. So much for madness, so much for sanity.
She offered out the pipe.
Smoke?
I should keep a clear head.
Good idea.
She spun the pipe across the floor, leaving a trail of smoking ash.
Very sane.
The dead help him. Leo thought he could still hear those people fucking or killing each other. Maybe it was a different set. Juren cleared his throat again.
I understand there has been another defeat in the east.
Grunted Judge.
Forrest got the better of the people's army yet again. General Cutler and a few of his losing officers are being dragged back to Adua to be tried for treason. Seems giving little men big men's shoes doesn't make them big, just makes them trip over.
She let her head drop to one side.
Now Forrest and his traitors are marching for Adua to put our dunce of a king back on the throne, would you believe? Quite the military muddle. Seems the great change is in need of a hero to save it.
Her brows went up, as though the idea had only now occurred.
How are you fixed, young lion? Keen to get back in the saddle?
For some months now, in fact, and especially since Vic Dan Teufel's recent visit, but Leo tried not to let his desires lead him about by the nose any more.
If I'm called on to defend the great change, he said calmly, I'll do my duty.
Huh. The corner of Judge's mouth curled up.
Do you know why they call me Judge? It's quite the story. Have some fucking tea, really.
And she settled back into her cushions and propped one bare foot up onto the table, staring thoughtfully up at the master maker. And Leo realized with a cold start that her gown had fallen open and given half the room a full view of her ginger quim. He couldn't tell if she'd done it on purpose, but something about the way she stuck it so carelessly in his face faintly terrified him. There was nothing he wanted to see less. But somehow he had to keep steering his eyes away.
I don't know who my parents were, she mused, wriggling her toes. Settlers in the far country, maybe. But they were killed when I was a child, and I was stolen by the ghosts, raised by the ghosts. in the clan of Great Sangeed, the Emperor of the Plains. The woman with the knives looked up from her dice and chuckled. Judge frowned over at her. Do I fucking amuse you? She shook her head and went back to her dice. They treated me lower than dirt, the ghosts, lower than a slave. But on account of my being an outsider, they made me judge of the disputes between their clans. It wasn't about justice or innocence or guilt. It was about what had to be done. Keeping the balance between the groups on the plane so no one got too much power over the others. She rubbed at the patchy stubble on the side of her head. Of course, the settlers came more and more in their fellowships, and they picked the ghosts off one by one and drove away the hunting and poisoned the water. One day they came to the village and killed everyone I knew and told me I was rescued. And they asked me what my name was. And you know what I said? Judge. She snapped her fingers. You're no fool. Maybe that's why I play judge now. They gave me a passion for keeping the balance.
That sounds more like an excuse than a reason, murmured Durand.
Leo frowned sideways at him.
They're the same thing seen from different sides.
Ha! Judge jabbed at Leo with a finger. I was going to say the very same thing. He's not just a pretty face, eh, Broad?
Broad stared at Leo, jaw muscles squirming, and took a sip from his bottle. Leo wondered whether he was so angry he couldn't speak, or so drunk he'd forgotten how. Maybe both.
You know the trouble with a pretty face, Judge was saying. People get used to its advantages, and when it's took away, they lack the wherewithal to make a success of themselves. Nothing sadder than a person who used to be beautiful. They have this desperate smile. Like me, it says, like me, even though there's nothing left to like.
She sat forwards, putting her groin back in shadow, thank the dead, and slid a hatchet from the table. Glarwood stirred nervously as she lifted it, but all she did was hack a leg from the chicken carcass with a couple of echoing bangs that caused a sleepy mew of upset from the room next door. She tossed the axe down, started gnawing hungrily at the bone, then paused.
What were we talking about?
The leadership of the People's Army, said Leo,
as though it was a matter of total indifference. He'd hardly spoken, but he felt as if her eyes were sizing him up and slitting him open and probing at his guts like a physician at a cadaver even so.
Right!
She stabbed at him with the chicken bone and a piece of meat flew off and stuck to the floor behind him.
A lot's changed this past year or two, but you're still popular. That military business is in your bones and fighting men respect you. Beat Stour Nightfall in a circle of blood and all. I hear you used to be reckless, but I reckon you've been cured of that. Can't say I trust you, but then I never trust anyone I trust, if you see what I mean. You're a risk, but nothing's safe these days, and nothing safe's worthwhile anyway.
So
you're the perfect choice.
And she sat and gnawed away at that bone.
But you're not the only one who wants something.
Judge tossed the stripped bone down, licked her fingers, then dried them off by dragging her hair out of her face.
Do you know the person I'd most like to put on trial?
Leo didn't want to draw this out. A conversation with Judge was a game that could turn fatal at any moment. He wondered who he'd most like to see on trial.
King Orso?
She wrinkled her nose.
That walking cock? No. Have you ever read one of Swarbrick's books?
Leo would rather have drunk Swarbrick's piss.
I'm not much of a reader. You should. They got me through some hard times. The last chapter is the sentimental farewell, but the climax of the story is a little bit before. The danger, the excitement, the triumph. You see?
putting King Orso on trial. She shrugged her bony shoulders high. That's the last chapter. It has to be done, but it'll get no one's juices flowing, eh, Broad?
Broad stayed silent.
No, the person I'd most like to put on trial is old Styx himself, Sandan fucking Glockter. He was the one who set the policies, the one who did the torturing and raised the gibbets and made all the examples, the one who racked up most of the names we've carved into the Square of Martyrs.
Judge curled back her lips in disgust.
But like the cunning old louse he is, he's wriggled away into the woodwork. I need someone in the dock who can help me winkle out the cripple.
She raised her red brows expectantly.
Well, we never wasted much warmth on each other, I promise you. I've no idea where.
I want to put your wife on trial.
Judge was smiling, so Leo took it for a joke and managed a sour grin himself.
You're joking.
I'm fucking not,
she hissed, showing her teeth.
I want your word. If I put your wife on trial, you'll do nothing to stop me. She denounces her father, tells us where he can be found. I dare say the court could find its way to clemency. Eh? Eh? Eh?
Leo swallowed. His heart was beating very loud. He glanced up at Broad, but the man's eye lenses had caught the light from a window and were bright white, so Leo couldn't see his eyes. There was something dead about his thickly stubbled face, scabs on his tattooed knuckles, a welt of bruises on one side of his neck. He lifted his bottle and took a sip.
Leo,
he heard Glarwood whisper, and Leo held up a hand to silence him. It was less than a year ago, if you could believe it, that he had introduced Savine to the people of Angland, cheering on the dockside, full of pride and admiration. He remembered using the word love, even though he wasn't sure now what he'd meant by it. If someone had threatened a hair on his wife's head then, they would have faced his rash and righteous fury. But there had been a great change since, a change in so many things. He couldn't afford rashness or righteousness, and fury even less.
If there is evidence against my wife,
Leo spoke the words slowly and precisely,
the nation must judge her. I agree to your terms.
There was a long, nervous silence. Then Judge started to laugh.
Oh, young lion! That's beautiful!
She slapped her tattooed thigh.
Love can bring folk together in fair weather, but it won't bind them when the chill sets in. Hate's better, in my experience. A common enemy gets folk moving together. But enemies get beaten and put behind you, like the Breakers beat the King, like the Magi beat Canadius. And then what happens? Folk get used to enemies. They always need more. They turn on each other.
Someone had wandered in from the room next door, a short, heavy-set man wearing a vest and nothing else.
What the fuck?
He muttered, squinting into the daylight.
Put some bloody clothes on, you animal!
Judge's eyes flickered back to Leo.
Love and hate, they're luxuries. Poets might say they're from the heart, but I say no. They're lies we tell ourselves, they're choices made. But fear,
and she lifted her trembling fist,
that's an instinct. Fear and lust and hunger, they're universal. The lowest insects have 'em. Fear is in the gut, it's in the bones, it's in the balls and the ass and the cunt. Fear and lust and hunger are what'll bind us together and keep us on the right path. The people don't need love or hate, young lion, but they always have to fear. Bear that in mind.
Leo thought it over and nodded.
Sage advice, he said,
and he didn't even have to lie.
So,
With an effort, he lifted his good foot, used the heel to slide some rubbish out of the way, and propped it on the stained table beside Judge's.
"Shall I put my riding boot on?"
"At once, if not sooner, General Brock. The young lion back in the saddle!"
And she threw her arms up, and one of the two men at the window gave a brief round of applause.
"Here's the irony. On behalf of the king, we've got a commoner who was made a Lord Marshal, and on behalf of the people, we've got a Lord Governor who made himself a commoner. Life can be horrible," she said, jabbing her thumb at dead juvens. "But life can be delightful too," pointing up at Canadius and his sea of fire.
"There's its real beauty, eh? In its range. Dare say you've an old uniform lying about somewhere. Might need to take it in around the knee, I suppose."
"The representatives will agree to it."
"Well, I haven't noticed anyone disagreeing with me lately. Have you?"
Judge jerked her head towards the man with the broken nose.
"Sparks, you'll be going along."
He looked as unhappy about it as Leo felt, but he hid it a lot less well.
"May, are you fucking disagreeing?"
Broad shifted, his free fist clenching, and Sparks took a cautious step back.
"Course not, Judge, course not.
He'll be, what do you call it, a conduit between you and the purity officers. Keep everyone nice and loyal and pointed the same way."
"No doubt he'll be a huge help."
Leo gritted his teeth as he rocked his weight back, then shoved himself to his feet, the ache in his stump turning sharp again.
"I'll send him along after, once we've had a little word. Burner's business, you know. I'm sure he can catch me up."
Leo tapped his false leg with his cane.
"I don't walk too quickly these days. I wouldn't want to intrude into the manly business of war, but one word of advice, General, before you ride to glory."
Judge let her head drop back, looking at him down her nose.
"Don't lose. Now, someone rub my fucking feet. Or start there, at any rate, and work upwards."
The horrible voices seemed to have stopped, at least, as Leo limped back towards the steps. Except for the crying one, that softly went on. Glaward hurried up beside him, hissing,
"She wants to put Savine on trial."
Leo tossed down his cane and caught the big man by the jacket, lurching into him and pinning him against the wall.
"Do you think I fucking missed that? I can warn her. You will not. You'll gather every man we can rely on and head out with me to join the People's Army at once."
Glaward stared at him, shocked, as though he'd never quite seen Leo until that moment and didn't like the look of him now he did.
"But your children..."
Leo shoved him back again, hissing through gritted teeth.
"If Savine runs, Judge will know we broke the deal and it will all be over. She has to trust me. Trust me enough, anyway. That's the only way this has a chance of working."
"He's right," said Duran softly, pushing Leo's cane against his chest and using it to lever him away from Glaward. "There's no choice." He saw it right off, of course. He'd never been sentimental.
"Savine wanted this," snapped Leo. "She should have known where it might lead."
He snatched his cane from Duran's hand and lurched off down the stairway again, the scraping of his iron foot on the marble echoing from the gilded ceiling.
"Should I have said no?"
He jerked his chin towards the slogan at the bottom of the steps.
"Should I have told Judge? Fuck yourself. We'd all have been in the dock together before sundown."
Behind him, Duran took a long breath.
"We all might end up there yet."